in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 712. My name, as it is this Wednesday, is Lisa Sheps. I am joined by the swarthy and beautiful Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Co-host extraordinaire. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Do not go away.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
You're rumbling and rolling. Coming down from
it is Wednesday, March 22nd, 2023. On the show today, we have the Vortex Rep and their show, The Dragonfly Princess. And later, we're going to be talking Penfold Theater and their show, Vincent, of course. Nicole and I and our wonderful guests will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, and Belarus. Stick around.
Attention. They're gonna yell, set that man free.
Set that man free.
Hi.
Hello, Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Lisa.
How are you feeling today? How's your teeth?
I'm so happy that all my stitches and stuff are out. I'm done with rearranging my face for
stitches
a while.
And stuff, by the way, this is the name of my third book.
Apparently all my teeth and my bone grafts and all the things look pretty, said the dentist. So, two thumbs up.
Wow. Good.
That's a major renovation right there.
Yeah, I had a lot going on the last 2 months, but I am ready for some chips and salsa.
Yeah.
So, I ate one potato chip yesterday, and my brother laughed at me and said I ate it like a rodent because I was so afraid. I was like, so afraid everything's a little tender.
Potato chips can be.
It was good. I ate three.
Potato chips can be scary.
I was living on the edge with them. They were mighty good.
Hey, why don't we introduce our guests? What do you think?
I think we should. We have some amazing people here today.
We have, veterans all. We have Bonnie Cullum. Hi, Bonnie Cullum.
Hi, so glad to be here.
And Melissa McKnight.
Hello.
And finally, Haley Armstrong. Hi, Haley.
Hi.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar.
Always rocking it.
I was having so much fun. We were rocking out to the Tooth and Throat Singers here in the lobby of the studio when he was playing that.
I love Kim Simpson.
Tooth and Throat. Tooth and Throat is what you were doing after you went to the dentist.
Exactly. I could have started a band.
You could have.
I might have made it to International Folk Bazaar.
The Tooth and Molar Singers.
I'd have to keep it folky.
Boy, yep. Did we have some openings this weekend or this week.
Oh, yes.
Well, we had two openings, but two big openings.
But I was about to say they were big ones.
Yep.
And then we weren't for a bit there, so it's nice to be.
Yep. No surprises on any of them, really. The first one, of course, is Parade. The wonderful Jason Robert Brown musical starring the indomitable, if that's a word that I'm using correctly. I just lost his name. Somebody help me.
The indomitable. I don't know because I have the Grobes in my head and it's not the Grobes. So,
oh my God.
Which is now I can see him and I'm like, well, I can't think of his.
Michaela Diamond plays Lucille. And bottom line is she really stole the show from Ben
Platt,
who played Leo. And of course, this is the true story of Leo and Lucille Frank. And they did something a little different than has been done before. So of course, the major productions of this show, it was opened on Broadway and then had a major redo in London at the
Donmar
Warehouse, and actually there was the version.
Donmar Warehouse.
I'm assuming that's the version they're doing now because that's the latest version. That's the version that Ground Floor Theater did back in 2015. So I'm assuming that's the same thing. Because there's some slight differences between the Broadway in the Donmar Warehouse. But I just want to read the opening of Jesse Green's review in the New York Times, which I kind of find interesting. You do not expect the star of a musical about a man lynched by an anti-Semitic mob to be his wife, especially when that man, Leo Frank, who was murdered in Georgia in 1915, is played with his usual intensity and vocal drama by Ben Platt. Yet in the riveting Broadway revival of the musical Parade that opened on Thursday at the Bernie B. Jacobs Theater, it's Michaela Diamond as Lucille Frank you watch most closely and who breaks your heart. With no affectation whatsoever and a voice directly wired to her emotions, she makes Lucille our way into a story we might rather turn away from.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I was hearing some great buzzy stuff about her ahead of time.
She's supposedly
what
amazing.
What a beautiful way to write about the connection of the artist. And
yeah,
the-
and we talked about her last week because I had not realized that I had seen her on stage before.
Yes.
She was in the Cher show. She played young Cher.
She was the and one Cher you liked.
The one Cher I liked. Exactly. It's a good thing. But what's interesting about this show, which is literally about the true story of the lynching of Leo Frank, and his trial, which is what is typically the focus of the play, this version focuses more on the relationship between Leo and Lucille and how Lucille is a brand new marriage, and she, in 1915, the role of a woman in a marriage was pretty set into the way it was. Well, with her husband in jail, set to be executed, she rose to the occasion, and at least in this dramatized version, became a really powerful woman and a really powerful partner to Leo Frank. So, and that's the way that this was approached in this particular
version.
Thank you. And I should say, we talked about Jason Robert Brown. The book is by Alfred Urey. And this was directed by who? Michael Arden. And this was a City Center Encores production not all that long ago.
No, not
And the cast came over pretty much. There were some changes, but mostly.
Not much. I think it was like two or three people.
Are y'all familiar with Parade at all?
Unfortunately, no.
No.
Music in it is really beautiful.
It's really beautiful.
And lucky for you, they're going to make a cast album of this group of fine folks.
Ooh,
they are indeed.
All right. Oh, there are some other cast albums out there, obviously, but they're going to make one with this group of people. That Michaela that we just heard about.
Well, and the Ben. You just spoiled my item number 7.
All I did was move it to item number 2. I was rearranging our shopping list, Lisa.
Now what are we going to do? Yes, they are making a cast album of
Sorry about that.
And actually, it drops pretty soon, so which means they've already recorded
Was funny, because when I saw they're doing an album, I'm like, well, it seems like you already recorded, not that you're telling me that you recorded it, but you know.
Yep, and actually I can tell you because I have it here.
Date? I don't remember the date.
It drops the 23rd, tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
Ooh, yeah.
So I'm going to say they recorded the album.
Well, they might be.
They've already been in the studio.
They may be doing it right now. What I found interesting after reading the review that I didn't really think of before, just about Jason Robert Brown in general, is that he typically uses a pastiche of music in all of his shows that find, you know, various
Good
ways.
Usage of the word pastiche there.
Thank you. But in this particular show, Jesse Green just points out Sousa style marches, work songs, blues, swing ditties, dainty waltzes. It's just a very interesting score. And if you don't know the show, if you don't get an opportunity to get to New York to see it, you got a couple of choices. You can wait till tomorrow and listen to the cast album. You could listen to the Donmar Warehouse cast album.
Yep.
You can listen to the Broadway musical cast album. Yep. Or you can wait till 2025 in December and watch a production at Ground Floor Theater.
Ooh.
I'm just, spoiler alert. we think. So they have 17 players in the orchestra, which is a lot.
I was like,
for today.
For today's day.
And only two shy of what it originally did. So in the Did They Like Us aggregator, they had 13 thumbs up, two in the middle and one thumbs down. And from what I did not read the thumbs down review, but from what I'm from what I heard in one of my podcasts, they had a real problem with the piece.
I was about to say, I think it was the material,
which they need to go back in time and talk about it when it first opened. Now, you know, the revival's not the, I don't know. I wouldn't talk about it during the revival because.
Well, what if they weren't around then?
Well,
there are some young people that can still have problems with pieces that were written a long time ago that weren't here.
You're always taking the other side.
I'm not taking sides. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Okay.
But
Broadway News' Brittany Samuel said Parade is a historical work, but Arden knows it did not need a heavy-handed contemporary revamp. Hatred is always timely, and violence has long been America's beloved spectacle. Chris Jones of the New York Daily News says the strength here includes a wonderful supporting performance from Kelly Barrett playing the mother of the murdered girl, and also from Sean Alan Krill playing the Georgia governor.
Interesting. Yeah, they must have really stood out.
Well, and I forgot the name of the character, the mother of I just lost her name.
Mm-hmm.
She's got one song.
She has.
And it's a pretty powerful one.
I was
one.
About to say, it's a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mary Fagan is the young girl that was killed.
Mm.
So that was Parade. I give it a thumbs up.
There you go. All right.
Haven't even seen it. but I give it a thumbs up. The other thing that opened, and I was wondering as I was writing our little script today, Nicole, did you see Dancing on Broadway? Before in the 70s?
Would have been wildly inappropriate for my parents to take me at my age in the 70s to that show.
Sorry,
Dancing.
I keep forgetting
but
how
my parents did see it. My grandmother saw it. She was just telling me about it like a week ago. My grandmother's almost 99, people. I'm very blessed to have these conversations.
Well, this is the rival. There's nothing racy about Dancing, so depending on how old you were.
It's. I would not take a 5 or 6 year old to go see Dancing. I probably wouldn't even take 10 year old. There's some. It's Fosse. It was the '70s.
Right, but it's,
if you know the movie All That Jazz, that "Come Fly with Me" number in there is basically in that semi-autobiographical sense was him working on it, and it's very much like that. Not really appropriate for.
Yeah. That would be something we could discuss. I don't see a problem. Anyway, this is an all dance. There's no storyline, no narrative at all.
No, it's where Anne Rankin became famous for those layouts and that woman with her legs for days. And what a layout. Oof.
This one was staged by Wayne Cilento, who was also in the original in the 77. Now, I just moved to New York then, and I'm disappointed that I didn't get to go see it.
My mom said it was spectacular. Spectacular. I'm bummed I didn't see it, but I want to see this.
Yeah, looks amazing. 16 dancers. Did they like it? 5 thumbs up, 3 in the middle, and 1 thumbs down. This was written, New York Times review was written by Jesse Green again. And I totally forgot. So this was all music taken from elsewhere, different places. But one of them was Mr. Bojangles. And so we can bring it back to Texas because that was written by Jerry Jeff Walker.
Correct.
I thought that I had also.
I believe in Fosse the Musical, there were 3 numbers from Dancing in that. There might have been 4, but I want to say there was 3 in it. I don't know. They're spectacular. The problem that comes across with Dancing is that this particular musical and the choreography that Bob Fosse did is so hard on a dancer's body on top of his choreography always being hard, that they were having so many injuries and it couldn't last forever. So it was always been a big argument. Do you bring it back? This is so hard on dancers. Do you bring it back? Which has been this back and forth for so many decades. And they were like, we're going to figure it out. And they made it happen.
How?
I don't know.
Just like, because you cast original, like double the amount of people and just
I don't know,
rotate full?
Still the original choreography. So I'm like, what do you do? How do you do that? How does it make it easier?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, this was the original production was done in 1977. It played for 1,774 performances, including previews. It was nominated for 7 Tony Awards. It won 2 of them for choreography and Jules Fisher for lighting.
I'm going to admit I've watched some bootleg copies of some of the stuff from there. It's just mesmerizingly spectacular. Someday, I wish I could have spent an hour in Fosse's head.
But it looks amazing. You can get a lot of information from the Wikipedia page because, you know, if they say it in Wikipedia, it's true. it's true. I am going to skip that. So I'm just going to go right to the other reviewers. Brittany Samuels of Broadway News said 16 formidable dancers with the endurance of Olympic athletes pushed through 2 hours and 15 minutes of hip rolls and bevels, mm-hmm. high flying leaps and fouette turns to a raucous Fuates. Audience of fans to Fuate. Who treat the recital more like a rock concert. The Daily Beast, Tim Tiemann, said the mesmerizing dancing of 16 strong cast and around them all that accentuate their physicality. Robert Brill's simple design in scaffolds and descending curtains, Reed Bartlemay and Harriet Jung's sexy, playful costuming, David Grill's lightings, which included bulbs of all colors flashing, spotlight beams, bright colors, baths for background, and Finn Ross's video design. Finally, Marilyn Stasso of Variety said, "This is one rock-solid company of dancing fools. Fosse would be proud." So, pretty amazing. Two really good ones.
Spectacular. Yeah, that's on my check with the Grobes.
Okay, good.
And Back to the Future.
So
random shows.
Did we read articles about the show Room that got canceled just recently?
I did skim a little bit over that. And then I feel like new news came out. Then more news came out, and I didn't read
all
of it.
There was a lot of news. It did change, but it was very reminiscent to me of Rebecca.
I was like, it just felt like deja vu in Rebecca land. Mm-hmm. So
this was the Adrian Warren vehicle.
We could have used our sound effect.
We could
have,
but I didn't bring it. So this Adrian Warren was in this, and it was a story, evidently a true story.
And Adrian Warren is like zing.
I know you love her. About a woman who is being held hostage by this man who rapes her, and she has a child, and she's bringing up this child. I think she was held hostage for 20 years.
I was like, it was decades. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty heavy duty thing. So evidently one of the, there was also a film starring Brie Larson, by the way.
Yeah. I didn't see it.
I didn't.
I didn't even realize that the movie that was out. I saw that and I was like,
I didn't either.
I missed that one.
But this was directed by Cora Bissett. It did have a premiere in 2017 in London. It also was in Ireland, Scotland, and Canada. But evidently, one of the lead producers initially said they're dropping out because of personal family issues. But then they said, here, I'll give you all the people I was talking to so make it whole. And then when the people went to go call them and talk to them about it, there was no there, which is very similar to Rebecca.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it did really well in other places. I don't know. I could see Adrian playing that role.
Yeah.
Adrian Warren became well known for playing Tina Turner and Tina.
She did.
Turner the musical. Woman is fierce.
So they lived, the story is that they lived in this one room for 7 years. So
that's a lot to unpack.
I did see Adrian Warren. I saw a tweet from her about this and just how heartbroken they all are. And, you know,
when you work on something and you're so committed.
They were 2 weeks from the first performance.
Yeah. And something so emotionally, like, you're invested on different levels. It's a lot.
Yep.
I went back and I did start Googling. This is when the news started changing and I stopped. But I did Google to see, like, how was it received overseas? And it seemed to do really well over there.
Yeah.
The Scotland and the Ireland and the England and the places.
Two more things we want to talk about before we go to take a little break. Danny DeVito is coming to Broadway.
I saw that.
Roundabout Theater playing next to his daughter, Lucy.
I saw that.
That's fun.
Yeah, and a Teresa Rebeck play.
Yes.
for the Roundabout Theater. And the show is called I Need That. It's a comedy about a widower, played by Danny DeVito. He's struggling to let go after the death of his wife. Lucy is playing the character's daughter. and then there's another actor, Ray Anthony Thomas. It's directed by Moritz von Stuppelnagel. It's just fun to say.
Who is that, Lisa?
Moritz von Stuppelnagel. I cannot help but think of Spring Awakening whenever I hear his name. Because of Moritz.
Because of Moritz. Every Moritz is Spring Awakening for you.
Yep. That's my ignorance right there in front of everybody.
I kind of like that.
Yeah. But that looks interesting. Roundabout. I think that they are only doing, and I just closed that thing, but they talked about the rest of their season two, which seems interesting. They are reprising a play from 19. Now I want to pull it up and look at it. But it looks interesting. I can't bring it up, so never mind. I also want to make sure that we don't get too far behind. Fiddler on the Roof sing-along. Did you see that?
I did see that.
I had to talk about that.
Well, you and I love everything Fiddler.
Because, you know, I love me my Fiddler.
I love
Fiddler.
Me the Fiddler, too.
And I'm trying to see it. So it's going to be played at, it's the film that's going to be played on March 19th, which is
passed.
Which
we talked about is so spectacular.
Yeah. So this is already passed. You
so
can't
it
go. But it seems
maybe
like
they'll
a lot
do
of
it
fun.
Again and make it a tradition.
It was done at Symphony Space. I can't believe I just noticed the date. This is very second. I'm just so excited about a Fiddler sing-along. I would have loved to have gone to that. I went to, years ago, at the Paramount Theater, a Wizard of Oz sing-along.
Oh, how fun.
Has anybody done that?
No. I have done a Wizard of
in
Oz
my
in
my living room.
Yes.
Annually.
Well, yes. Annually. Well, what I discovered as being for the sing-along is after they get to Oz... after I Am King of the Forest, there is no other musical number.
Wow.
I know. In the stage play, there's the jitterbug that happens after that. Mm-hmm. And in the new Wizard of Oz that Andrew Lloyd Webber did, there's a song for the queen, or for the witch. She has a number after that. But yeah. Anyway, but that's the film that was starring Topol, who just passed away. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is Anne Reinking again. It all comes around.
The woman had legs for days. Her layouts, if you can find video of her dancing,
I hear that showed up in dancing.
Layout, yes, that's how she became famous for that.
That's what I heard.
Oh my goodness. She does a few in All That Jazz, actually, in that movie. She does it in Annie.
So there is a new Anne Reinking Encores Choreography Fellowship.
Fantastic.
And the Encores is pertinent because she choreographed Chicago when Encores did it, which is the version that's playing right now.
Correct.
Because to refresh folks' memory, when Chicago opened on Broadway, it did not do well. It reopened in Encores back when they were really doing their core stuff, which is showing things that didn't do well. And then she choreographed that, and it...
She did...
I don't say
she used most of the original choreography. It's mostly Bob Fosse's choreography, and she changed a few things here and there. But that was her and Bebe Neuwirth and Joel Grey. That when that opened, that was spectacular.
Anyway, this fellowship will provide early career choreographers with developmental opportunities alongside theatrical professionals who work on the City Center Encore series. And this is specifically constructed to support marginalized choreographers.
Yeah.
So I think that's...
That was her jam whole life, which is so wonderful. Someone else is carrying that.
That was her jam. So we're going to take a little break.
She's a spectacular lady. Just made me smile thinking
she was,
about her.
And she's... Yes. True. And this is from... this is Anne Reinking singing from a show called Good Time Charlie. Which has a very interesting story as well, which we may talk about a little bit after this break and before our next guests. So let's listen to the song, One Little Year, sung by Anne Reinking.
Nobody has to say thanks, but if somebody wants to say thanks, I can think of a...
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and...
Nicole Shiro.
Yay. We are joined here in the studio by artistic director and the director of this piece, Bonnie Cullum. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Nicole.
Hello.
And then associate artistic director.
Managing director.
I do it every single time I get it wrong. Melissa McKnight, who is also performing in this piece.
I am. Hello.
And finally, Haley Armstrong, who is one of the performers in this piece as well.
Hello.
I'm sure we can add a lot more to your CV, but that's it's with regard to this piece, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. there you go. So just real quick. I closed it. The show that last piece of music came from.
Good Time Charlie
was a vehicle for Joel Gray and her. And it was written originally for, oh my God, somebody else. And I can't remember who it was. But they had to postpone to get either her or Joel Gray on. And then Joel, it only ran for a short time because when he left, they could not replace him.
I was like, they couldn't replace him. I remember that one.
Yeah, interesting. But we're here to talk to the Vortex.
He's another special person.
He is. About the Dragonfly Princess.
It's very exciting. I'm just going to say this since the listeners can't. The artwork that Melissa did here is spectacular.
Thank you. It really is. And you can see that at vortexrep.org. But tell us about this show. This has been done here before, has it not?
We did do the original production 15 years ago. And it is a dark fairy fantasy opera by Chad Salvata, who is the artistic director of Ethos and also my husband. So I've lived with this show for a really long time. And over the last few years, he wrote some original different scenes and reshaped the show. He's actually working on a novel of the whole epic saga of the dragonfly world. And so...
And he won a B.I. and Payne for this, didn't he?
He did. He got a B.I. and Payne award for the original score back in 2007 when we did it originally. So it's really exciting to get to revisit the material. You know, it was really just a whole... A lot of Chad's work has been either sci-fi or fantasy, very, very intensive. And we haven't done a show like that in a few years.
It's true.
So it's really exciting to get to create it from scratch, really, with new costumes, new visions, new the way it looks, the way it comes together, and then having these new songs in it.
That's cool. It's really just like taking it all and peeling it apart and then putting things together with
exactly,
new pieces almost.
Exactly, because
it's
so different than what we did before.
And this is completely sung through, is that correct?
Totally sung, yeah, not spoken.
And in the indoor theater?
Inside, yeah.
What's the name of the stage?
The Eloise Brooks Cullum stage. We call it the Eloise.
The Eloise. So that's amazing. And Melissa, what is your role in this?
I am playing Mala, the Dragonfly Princess.
Which is, we see your picture on this.
Indeed, that is theoretically me.
I can see.
It resembles me.
I can see the resemblance.
Yeah.
And Haley, who are you playing?
I play Vine, the sorceress of Coil Temple.
Oh.
Sort of the antagonist.
Okay.
Of the show.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, those
stuff.
Are the fun roles to play.
Oh, so much. Love a good villain. Love.
Indeed.
Now, when you and I had talked earlier, you had mentioned that this is, sort of goes, you might call this an opera. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's an opera. It's all sung. The music is contemporary and electronic.
Uh-huh.
Chad composed everything and performs everything. It's all pre-recorded music, but all the vocals are sung live.
Sung live. And how many people in the cast totally?
It is 11.
Oh,
that's a lot.
That's a hearty size. That's,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we were fortunate to be able to bring in our original design team. Roy Taylor came in to do the sound, and Jason Amato's here to do the lights, and Anne-Marie Gordon is here to do the scenic. And that was the original team from 15 years ago, and they've all moved away. So it feels really like, you know, having my original design team working together to create a whole new vision has been really, really exhilarating. I love working with that team and with this group of actors in rehearsal. So great to be in rehearsal.
Exactly. So why is it that you decided to bring this back now?
We wanted a big showpiece for our 35th choral season. So we were looking for something that was large and interesting and different. And Chad had been wanting to do this revision version. So rather than do a new Chad piece, we are doing the revised Chad piece.
Amazing. That is great. And are we looking, is there an intermission? Is this one actor?
Yes, it's full length. And
yes, please.
Yeah. Full length.
I was about to say both actors were like, huh?
Yeah. Melissa spends the whole show on stage, so the intermission is necessary. And it's intermission and full length and really outstanding cast. Melissa is the only returning cast member, and then Haley and Aaron Geddes are in it. They've done a bunch of Vortex stuff, and Gina Houston, and then like a slew of new people that have never performed at the Vortex before. So we are really in an exciting new era of fresh new faces.
Sure. And they are all listed out at vortexrep.org, and there will be a link on offstageandonair.com to just directly to that page so that you can see stuff. And I see that Blaze is doing the choreography.
Yes. Yay. The choreography is lovely.
Yeah. Blaze Ryson.
Yes.
Who's amazing.
Everybody was doing hand claps behind the microphone when you said Blaze's name.
Hand claps. I want to hear about.
Can't see that. I have to give them.
That's right. The visual
directions.
Well, we know that radio is an oral medium.
Yes.
I just like to throw words like that out. Haley, I want to hear more about your character. I just love the. I don't know if this is the bad guy character, but I love the bad guy characters.
Yeah, I love the bad guy characters too. I'm not sure if I said this, but villains really are my favorite kind of archetype to play, probably. But,
yeah.
I am super nervous because I don't want to spoil anything, but Vine is very much a villainous character, but on my own, I've kind of been doing like a character study, and I've been watching The Lion King, like Disney. Uh-huh. And I've been looking at Scar, and Vine's trajectory in this opera is very much like Scar from The Lion King. Just like, this is a villain, but with a little more context. Mm. Are they?
Mm-hmm.
Is she?
Okay.
So
I feel the same way about Mala. She's the heroine, but is she? Like, that's what I really love about Chad's work, is that it's complicated and mm-hmm. takes into account all the complexities of human nature and the lightness and darkness in everyone.
What is good could be bad, and what is bad can be good.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. What's that. Good for one culture is bad for another mm-hmm. culture. And oh gosh, it's beautifully complex.
Everybody's been misunderstood.
Only we just talk to each other.
Can't we all just get along? Well, you know, whenever I think of Chad's work, I always think of flowy otherworldliness. Is that the feel that we get? What are we going to feel like when we walk into the Eloise stage and see the environment?
Oh gosh,
Melissa,
it is a feast for the eyes. It is beautiful. It is fantasy. You will feel like you've stepped into the realm of the fairies, and it's very immersive. So I mean, as things tend to be mm-hmm, in our mm-hmm. space, because yep. we're black box, but this even more so, things encroach into your areas.
Oh,
really intense lighting.
Yeah,
mm.
It's delicious.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds amazing. And who are we going to bring the kiddos to this?
Well, I have been telling families I would, if I had to rate it, I guess I'd say PG-13 because mm-hmm. it's not meant for children. It wasn't written for children.
Right.
But there's no nudity. There's no bad language. There's just maybe some moral and ethical dilemmas yeah. that people have to kind of sure. deal with. And even in terms of violence, there's not really a lot of violence. There's a lot of pearl violence. They make violence with magical chants and pearls. So,
like pearls, like the gem pearl,
like big yes. handheld. I mean, because
from
we're
big
fairies,
oysters.
Yes, because we're fairies. First, we're technically very small, but of course, you're seeing us in our full size. And so, Zephyra, the dragonfly Zephyra, is huge.
Do you get to fly?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. That's what we want to see.
We love fire, flying, and water on stage. Lisa and I talk about this quite a lot.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Are any of the things, the elements from the show, are they creeping out into either the butterfly bar or the outdoor areas?
Well, we will have the Dragonfly Princess cocktail in the bar, which is going to be a fabulous concoction that our bar manager, Emma Robinson,
do you have any idea what that is yet?
I do. It's an herbal infused gin drink with some vegetable accents, and that's about all I know.
That sounds good. That. So what's the name of it?
The Dragonfly God.
The Dragonfly.
No, Princess. Princess.
The Dragonfly Princess.
Jumping ahead in time.
Sorry. Princess.
Well, that is great. I'm looking forward to seeing this. Where can folks go to get more information?
Vortexrep.org, our website.
Yep. And when do you open?
Saturday.
This coming Saturday. Yeah. That's the 25th.
Yes, that's
the 20th. Right. Mama's birthday.
It's your birthday?
My mother's.
Oh, it's your mother's birthday.
And it's 3 months from mine, because we're all the 25th.
And how long do you play?
We're running for a month.
So through April 15th?
Yes.
That's fantastical.
That is...
4 weeks.
Yeah. That is great. Is there anything else? We're pretty much out of time. Is there anything else you wanted to cover while down there our last minute or so? Nope. Mm. Did I catch it all?
Well, I just think it's an experience. It's amazing. It's different. It's epic. And I just love how weird it is. It's like, it's not, you know, it's not a normal show, and it's not an average musical.
The Vortex is always trying to get weird back into keep Austin weird.
I was really happy about how as it evolves, the way that it is sensational and also other.
Well, great. And the wonderful thing about going to see a show at the Vortex is you can make a real evening of it. You can get there early and eat dinner at Patrizzi's. You can have a cocktail at the Butterfly Bar. And then after the show, you, of course, want to sit and talk about it with your cohorts that sat with you. So always a good time at the Vortex.
Indeedy.
Thank you all so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us on.
Really, thank you.
Okay, that was Bonnie Cullum, Melissa McKnight, and Haley Armstrong of Vortex Reps, production of the Dragonfly Princess, playing... I didn't put it in my cheat sheet. March 25th through April 15th. For more information, you can go to vortexrep.org. And now we will listen to the Sapphire Dragonfly from Flying Over Sunset. We'll be right back.
Oh.
I see a dragonfly.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And we had so much fun with Melissa.
We're having a lot of fun today.
And Bonnie. Hold on. I got to make sure I hear. Oh, you know what? I could hear you if I put the headphones on my ears.
Yes. Haley, Melissa, and Bonnie were a lot of fun.
Amazing. So let's introduce the people that came in as they left. Both veterans of the show and both the co-founders of Penfold Theater, Ryan Crowder. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Well, you know, now I'm going to turn your microphone on. Say that again.
Hello.
And Nathan Jerkins.
Hi.
Okay, so we're not here to talk about your thing yet.
Okay, that's fine.
We're just going to skip to what's happening locally. And again, we were talking during the break about that... the show, Flying Over Sunset, was just like 2 seasons ago.
It was just on Broadway last, because it was still playing last summer. The commercials just make me laugh so hard. Like, what do you get when Cary Grant's on an acid, takes LSD? And I'm like, whoa, wait, what? But yeah, that is the musical, Flying Over Sunset. It.
So let's just talk a little bit about what's going on locally. One of the things I just wanted to talk about was Lysistrata Comedy Festival that Cold Town Theater is doing. On March 30th through April 2nd.
You like saying Lysistrata.
I say it a lot.
I know you do.
Well, because I talk about Lysistrata Jones a lot.
I know, but it's just...
So, okay. Fine. Well, okay. That was also...
Just a comment. Also, no basis for anything.
Also my sorority name in college.
There you go.
There you go.
South by Southwest has come and gone.
Yes, it has.
It was a non-event for me. What about any of y'all?
My wife is in the tech field, and so I got to go to a very chic party
Monday
of South By, but that was it.
Well, that was Elon Musk there?
He was not there, thankfully.
Yeah, I just, anyway, he just made the news again.
He's not stopping the news.
But next year, I have got to remember to go look at the list of people coming in town. There was a lot of Broadway people that came into town. And I'm going to try to get them on the show next
year.
Yes,
because surprisingly, they do movies too.
They're actors. Do movies. They are.
It's magical.
Still playing around town is A Nightbird at Austin Playhouse. You can catch the last weekend.
Final weekend, yeah.
The final weekend. It looks amazing. I'd love to see, I'm going to try to get to see it this weekend if I can. And then Steel Magnolias, also final weekend, City Theater. And that's over at, I forgot the name of the church, but it's right over here in Cherrywood. Ain't Too Proud is happening at Bass Concert Hall as part of Broadway in Austin. That happens the 28th through the 2nd of April. And I'm so disappointed that I'm not going to get to go see it.
Well, if you're not here this week, it's still going to be around Texas. And I can tell you it will be in Houston in August.
Yeah, well, that's always a possibility.
I can just tell you if you're looking for options.
But I was looking forward to that. But then I couldn't do it because I'm a busy, busy person.
Yeah, this one has a lot of meat to it, like how you like the Jersey Boys and
yeah,
stuff.
You saw it. Well, and there's a connection. Am I right about this? Never mind, I'm thinking about something else.
Okay.
There's a Guido was part of, which we didn't talk about. What's his name, Guido, from Frankie Valli's, from the Four Seasons? And he's part of the... A Beautiful Noise, which is going on tour, which I was going to talk about. We didn't.
Got it.
Beautiful Noise.
You're just making Jersey.
Neil Diamond. And Guido is part of that production.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. I knew there was a reason. Okay. The Tavern, Different Stages, is still playing. If you want to go to a rip-roaring comedy, it closes on the 2nd. Then we have what we're going to be talking about here later is Vincent. By Penfold Theater, not to be missed. And then we just spoke to the Vortex about the Dragonfly Princess playing the 25th through April 15th. Cat in the Hat, still going. It's like an Ever-Ready Bunny.
Cat in the Hat, I know, with Octavia and Jason Groff and some other good people. That runs for a while still.
It runs through the 23rd of April.
Yeah.
And then coming up in about a week and a half, Row is opening over at Zach Theater.
Yes, they're deep in the rehearsals for that.
Directed by Jenny Lavery.
Jenny Lavery. Yep. I'm so excited to see the Jenny Lavery.
So lots of good stuff locally to see. I'm stalling for time because I have to open up my computer to do the next part. Because you know, it is today in theater history.
Stuff happened. Ooh. Did you know that?
Stuff happened.
Even in theater history. Yeah. Stuff happened.
And it's not showing
Lisa
up. I've got
to say it to me. Stuff happened.
Uh-huh. That's going to be our new theme song.
History. Yep. Stuff happened. And you'll know when Lisa finds it.
I found it.
Okay. And she'll tell you about the history. Okay.
God of Carnage opened in 2009.
Yes. Remember when that person tried to climb on stage and plugged their cell phone into the plug?
Into the plug.
Yeah.
Curtains opened in 2007.
Oh my gosh. That was so good. That was it was so good with David Hyde Pierce. It was one of Kander and Ebb's last fully done musicals that hadn't been produced by the time. It was so good. And I saw Ice-T and Coco in the car on the way there.
Okay.
Sorry, I get excited about Curtains a lot.
I know that. Well, and for good reason. I actually saw it for my very first time, a high school production this year as part of my duties as an adjudicator with that. And I was just so impressed with the show itself.
In the Boat.
It's an amazing show. It's not done enough. It's a lot of fun.
That's what I'm like. I don't get it. It's just old school Waka Waka Broadway kind
of
like.
It's a lot of fun. It's a show within a show. It's very meta. Mm-hmm. And it was written by Rupert Hall. No. Yes.
Yeah, Rupert Holmes wrote the music. And Cameron Ebb did the music, and Rupert Holmes wrote the book.
Okay, thank you. I was about to say Rupert Holmes, but I knew Cameron Ebb did it.
Yeah.
So that opened in 2007, and
but
I think people
should...
he's
the dude that did Drood, so he's a little...
Well, I know.
He's a little smart also, and witty like that.
He also wrote the Pina Colada song.
He did.
What?
He wrote the Pina Colada song.
Well...
Do we all know what that is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
But Ryan is looking at me like he doesn't
know. I
don't
know the Pina Coladas.
Everybody. Getting lost in the rain.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a story.
They're cheating on each other.
They're cheating on
each other.
All right. If we don't if we don't keep going, we're not going to have time to talk about Vincent.
Okay.
We have to keep moving.
That's fine.
It's fine.
We'll just replace Vincent with the Pina Colada song.
There you go. Could be done.
90 minutes of the Pina Colada song.
5 years ago, Frozen opened up on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And in 1962, another show that doesn't get done very often, I Can Get It For You Wholesale.
Oh, yeah, that is another one that people don't do a lot. Was Elliot Gould in that?
It was, yes, Elliot Gould was in it with one Barbara Streisand.
I was like, that's what the Barbara Streisand
that is.
Because why do they always call me Miss Marplestein? Miss Marplestein?
It's set in New York City in the Garment District in 1937. Mm-hmm. And very interesting, produced by David Merrick. We all know how I feel about him. I'm not fond of David Merrick. He was the Scott Rudin of his day.
Oh.
Also opened in 1956, Mr. Wonderful. Birthdays, Richard Easton, Christopher Wheeldon, Stephanie Mills, ease on down the road.
Yeah.
And then two notable birthdays are today.
Who? Tell me.
Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim.
Wow.
On the same day, they share a birthday.
I did see that. And poor Andrew, I'm just sending him some love. He's having some rough time with his son. His son has some really bad cancer, and he's not able to make the Cinderella opening, and he's dealing with family stuff. And I just, I send love out to anyone dealing with family stuff.
And when she's talking about Cinderella, she's speaking of bad Cinderella.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break. Right. Let's listen to Elliot Gould singing, where is it called? The Way Things Are from I Can Get It For You Wholesale. We'll be right back.
You're the catcher.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And then you heard me talking during that last break because my microphone was on.
Ha! Talking about good stuff.
So let's jump right into Vincent in our last 10 minutes here. We have the stars of the show,
yes.
The artistic directors of the company, and the founders of the company all in the same room. We need
a
bigger
crowded
room.
Yeah.
Well, so many. People. The co-stars of a one-person show.
There you go. Well done. We have Ryan Crowder, who plays Vincent.
That's me. No.
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 Oh, you play Theo.
Play Theo.
Right. Okay. You know, I haven't seen it yet.
I don't know. Theo also sometimes plays Vincent.
Well, that's true.
So
that's true.
Then we also have Nathan Crowder. I'm Nathan Crowder.
Yeah.
Nathan
Durkin. Okay. I'll take it.
Who plays Theo.
Yes.
So tell us about the show. What is it?
I think at its most basic, Vincent tells the story about the life and work of Vincent van Gogh from the perspective of his brother Theo. And it's based on actual letters that went back and forth between Theo and Vincent over the course of about a decade. As Theo tells this story to the audience gets to see photographs and reproductions of Vincent and his work throughout his life, which is really cool. It's a one-person show written by Leonard Nimoy when he wasn't doing Spock on Star Trek. He toured the country, maybe the globe, with this piece.
Performing it?
Performing this piece. It was a passion project of his. One-person show. Nathan and I are trading off night to night in the role. It's been great fun. Am I leaving anything out? It's kind of a love story. I mean, this is... Vincent van Gogh is someone who was definitely misunderstood and maligned in his day.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, what a lot of people remember about him is that he cut off his ear.
Yeah.
And so this is really Theo's attempt to make a defense of this person who he really loved and cared for, who was different, but also beautiful.
Different is good.
Different is good.
And an amazing talent. When there was a... exhibit of Van Gogh and Gauguin that went around, and they told the story of they lived in the little house together.
That's right.
And how Gauguin was just so frustrated because Van Gogh would just like slap stuff together, and it was beautiful. And Gauguin had to work really hard to do the same thing. You can see they did some portraits of the same person at the same time, and you know, Van Gogh like knocked it out and went to the bar, and Gauguin just sat and worked over it for years and years, and Van Gogh's was better. But very interesting life that when I saw that exhibit, I learned a lot about his life in that
He's
short
fascinating.
Period of time.
He had an obsession with Japanese woodblocks.
Well, who doesn't?
He did.
Which is, and I have a woodblock of a woodblock from a woodblock artist here of his.
I
have a woodblock that she made of his woodblocks that he made that are all in the Van Gogh Museum in
Amsterdam.
That's so good.
But there's a lot of stuff in writings of their letters back and forth between the wood blocking and stuff. He was just, he loved to take in everyone else's art and the way they did it and not just his point of view. It was so fascinating.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that I love so much about this show. You can see him picking up things in his life that then go into his works, and that so much of the literal words that Ryan and I are saying in this play are lifted directly from the letters from Theo to Vincent and from Vincent back to Theo. More than half of the dialogue in the whole show is actually their words that they put together, right? And I appreciate, like Ryan was saying earlier, the sort of love story of this, because it is a one-person show about the life of Vincent Van Gogh, but the one person you meet on stage isn't Vincent Van Gogh. It's his brother who loved him and who cared for him and who sort of kept the world at bay for him as much as he could for as long as he could, right? So it also ends up being a story not just of this creative genius, but also about being someone who loves and cares for a family member that has a mental illness and yet still has so much to give to the world, right? That that there is difficulty in loving and caring for someone who struggles with that, but that it's worth it, and that there is so much joy and beauty brought to the world through that person and through that relationship, which is ultimately life-giving for both of them.
Yeah,
yeah, amazing. You're going to do a little piece, this is a perfect opportunity to listen to that. How would we set this piece up?
This is a section of the play where Theo is talking about Vincent's attempts to be a teacher himself, a teacher of art.
Okay, great. This is Nathan Jerkins doing a piece from a Penfold Theater Company's production of Vincent.
Vincent was struggling with new ideas, new visions of his own. He couldn't allow himself to be smothered by the pious attitudes of pompous professors. He was a better teacher than they. He loved to teach, and the few students that he had adored him. He even tried to teach me. He urged me to paint. Theo, old man, you've been a dealer in art for quite some time. Have you ever considered taking up the brush yourself? No, I said. No. No, thank you. I have this nagging habit which prevents me. He said, what nagging habit? I said, eating regularly. Well, eventually he persuaded me. How could I shirk my responsibility? How could I deny my talents to the world? The next thing I know, Vincent had furnished me with paints, canvas, easel, brushes, and a lot of enthusiasm. He was like a frantic mother hen standing over my shoulder offering advice. Perspective, old boy, perspective. Balance the composition, give it depth, and be forceful. The next thing I know, he would snatch the brush from out of my hand and scratch furiously on the canvas. A line here, some color here, some shading there. Be forceful. Forceful! Now, there you go, old man, and don't forget to clean your brushes. The oils will harden. They'll become useless. This went on for a week. At last, I was ready. The tempest of my genius was struggling to be set free. I'd already picked the perfect little scene.
a marketplace. Farmers and their donkey-drawn carts, fruits and vegetables, shining pewters from London, fabrics and tapestries from exotic places in the Far East. The scene was a collage of brilliant color. A little yellow here, a little green here, swipe some gamboge about, balance, perspective, give it depth, balance the composition. Done. I could not wait to show it to Vincent. I hurried home as fast as I could. Vincent, I have something to show you. You're probably wondering what I've been up to this morning. Well, I have been painting. I want you to know that should I ever receive any recognition for this work, I will tell the world that you are responsible for it. A strange look came over his face. Then he said, "Well, old man, did you remember to clean out your brushes?" Then he went off and got drunk somewhere. I didn't see him for 2 days. It's just as well. One artist in the family is quite enough.
Oh, my God. Excellent.
That's so much fun.
We have, like, just a minute left, and there's so much I wanted to talk about. But I want to make sure that everybody knows that you guys are both performing this at different nights.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I really wanted to get into the meat of what that was like, but unfortunately, we do not have time.
Well, another time.
Yeah. Can you tell me how, if I'm interested in finding out information about the show, and I want to see Ryan playing it, and then I want to see Nathan playing it, how would I organize my day? How would I find that information?
So you would go to our website, www.penfoldtheater.org. Mm-hmm. There's a page dedicated to Vincent, and on there is a schedule of not just the performances in general, but also who's playing what night, so you can, you know, plan your calendar.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you all so much for coming on. Tell me when you open. Tell me when you close.
March 23rd, this Thursday, we open. We run for 3 weeks, and we close April 8th.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for being
thank
on the
you
show.
So much
thank
for
you,
coming
ladies.
On.
That was Ryan Crowder and Nathan Jerkins of Penfold Theater Company's production of Vincent, playing the 23rd through April 8th. For more information, penfoldtheater.org. And we really just have enough time to say goodbye and hand it off to John Hoffner of the Austin Common Radio Hour. And we're going to go out with listening to from Everybody's Talking About Jamie, the London cast, Work of Art. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye, folks.
Ciao. You belong in the spotlight.